Mr. Tate rocked on his heels and said patiently, "He'd flung Jim down. He stumbled over a root under that tree, and look, I can show you." Mr. Tate reached in his side pocket and withdrew a long switchblade knife. As he did so, Dr. Reynolds came to the door. "The son, deceased's under that tree, doctor, just inside the schoolyard. Got a flashlight? Better have this one." "I can ease around and turn my car lights on," said Dr. Reynolds. But he took Mr. Tate's flashlight. "Jim's all right. He won't wake up tonight, I hope, so don't worry." "That the knife that killed him, Heck?" "No, sir, still in him. Looked like a kitchen knife from the handle. Ken ought to be there with the hearse by now, doctor. Night." Mr. Tate flicked open the knife. "It was like this," he said. He held the knife and pretended to stumble. As he leaned forward, his left arm went down in front of him. "See there? Stabbed himself through that soft stuff between his ribs. His whole weight drove it in." Mr. Tate closed the knife and jammed it back in his pocket. "Scout is 8 years old," he said. "She was too scared to know exactly what went on."
"You'd be surprised," Atticus said grimly.
"I'm not saying she made it up. I'm saying she was too scared to know exactly what happened. It was mighty dark out there, black as ink, and it'd take somebody mighty used to the dark to make a competent witness."
"I won't have it," Atticus said softly.
"God damn it, I'm not thinking of Jim." Mr. Tate's boot hit the floorboard so hard, the lights in Miss Maudie's bedroom went on. Miss Stephanie Crawford's lights went on. Atticus and Mr. Tate looked across the street, then at each other. They waited. When Mr. Tate spoke again, his voice was barely audible. "Mr. Finch, I hate to fight you when you're like this. You've been under a strain tonight no man should ever have to go through. Why you ain't in bed from it, I don't know. But I do know that for once you haven't been able to put two and two together, and we've got to settle this tonight because tomorrow'll be too late. Bob Yule's got a kitchen knife in his craw." Mr. Tate added that Atticus wasn't going to stand there and maintain that any boy Jim's size with a busted arm had fight enough left in him to tackle and kill a grown man in the pitch dark. "Heck," said Atticus abruptly, "that was a switchblade you were waving. Where'd you get it?"
"Took it off a drunk man,"
Mr. Tate answered coolly. "I was trying to remember. Mr. Yule was on me. Then he went down. Jim must have gotten up. At least I thought." "Heck, I said I took it off a drunk man downtown tonight. Yule probably found that kitchen knife in the dump somewhere. Honed it down and bided his time. Just bided his time." Atticus made his way to the swing and sat down. His hands dangled limply between his knees. He was looking at the floor. He had moved with the same slowness that night in front of the jail, when I thought it took him forever to fold his newspaper and toss it in his chair. Mr. Tate clumped softly around the porch. "It ain't your decision, Mr. Finch. It's all mine. It's my decision and my responsibility. For once, if you don't see it my way, there's not much you can do about it. If you want to try, I'll call you a liar to your face. Your boy never stabbed Bob Yule," he said slowly. "Didn't come near a mile of it, and now you know it. All he wanted to do was get him and his sister safely home." Mr. Tate stopped pacing. He stopped in front of Atticus, and his back was to us. "I'm not a very good man, sir,
but I am sheriff of Macomb County. Lived in this town all my life, and I'm going on 43 years old. Know everything that's happened here since before I was born. There's a black boy dead for no reason, and the man responsible for it's dead. Let the dead bury the dead this time, Mr. Finch. Let the dead bury the dead.
Mr. Tate went to the swing and picked up his hat. It was lying beside Atticus. Mr. Tate pushed back his hair and put his hat on.
I never heard tell that it's against the law for a citizen to do his utmost to prevent a crime from being committed, which is exactly what he did. But maybe you'll say it's my duty to tell the town all about it and not hush it up. Know what happened then? All the ladies in Macomb, including my wife, would be knocking on his door bringing angel food cakes. To my way of thinking, Mr. Finch, taking the one man who's done you and this town a great service and dragging him with his shy ways into the limelight, to me, that's a sin. It's a sin, and I'm not about to have it on my head. If it was any other man, it'd be different. But not this man, Mr. Finch. Mr. Tate was trying to dig a hole in the floor with the toe of his boot. He pulled his nose, then he massaged his left arm. I may not be much, Mr. Finch, but I'm still sheriff of Macomb County, and Bob Ewell fell on his knife. Good night, sir. Mr. Tate stamped off the porch and strode across the front yard. His car door slammed, and he drove away. Atticus sat looking at the floor for a long time. Finally, he raised his head. "Scout," he said, "Mr. Ewell fell on his knife. Can you possibly understand?" Atticus looked like he needed cheering up. I ran to him and hugged him and kissed him with all my might. "Yes, sir, I understand," I reassured him. "Mr. Tate was right." Atticus disengaged himself and looked at me. "What do you mean?" "Well, it'd be sort of like shooting a mockingbird, wouldn't it?" Atticus put his face in my hair and rubbed it. When he got up and walked across the porch into the shadows, his youthful step had returned. Before he went inside the house, he stopped in front of Boo Radley. "Thank you for my children, Arthur," he said.